Puis... Welcome to Beerfield. I am your host, Chris Hopper at Beerfield Hop with DPs, joined by Ryan Miner underscore FFB. Dan Thury is off in the wilderness saving an endangered species of wombat, believe it or not.
What a life.
What a life.
What a time to be alive, actually, you know?
That's right. That's right. I don't actually know what he's doing. I don't remember, but I'm just going to assume it's that so I don't lose my pristine image.
It sounds better than what he's really doing. I know what he's doing, but. We're going to go with what you said.
Oh, right. No, I do know what he's doing. Never mind. We're going to go with what I said.
Right.
Right. Sounds way better. We got news for you. So obviously we're going to go through that. We're going to talk Hopkins for a little bit. We're going to go ahead and read some Roto World straight off the page because it's been busy. So there's been absolutely no prep for this episode. And we're going to get into some Dynasty 101. We'll cover some of the hype that's coming out on players and just have a good old conversation. Before we do that, as always, though, we are drinking something, so we're going to talk about that.
What's fueling beer fueled?
And you're going to start that because this can was a gusher, and I got to go get a paper towel.
Oh, I hate when that happens. All right, so tonight I am once again drinking another New Belgium, this time Voodoo Vice IPA. It comes in at 7.1%. Cool can art, if I can get it on it. Oh, it does show up on here. So as long as I keep it in my face and don't move too much. Skulls. Oh, that's what I like about New Belgium, man. They always have like fun can art.
Are you drinking?
New Belgium Voodoo Vice IPA.
Oh, yeah. Like with the skeleton can art and everything?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like Miami Vice, but dead.
Dead. Look at that.
Oh, my God, yeah. That's
how
a
that
bad
beer
batch,
is born.
Huh?
No, it's not a bad batch. It's just, it's carbed. It smells fine. I'll let you know if it's bad when I drink it. But overcarbed like that doesn't necessarily mean infection or bad batch or anything like that. Doesn't necessarily mean oxidized. It could just be that the can was disturbed. I did just carry it running down a flight of steps. There's a lot of different reasons that happens. It isn't just a bad batch. So, and if it is, we'll go get a backup can. Because it could just be a bad can, too. Get shit in there like that. Anyway, I am drinking Southern Crisp. It is their Pilsner-style lager. This is from Southern Crisp Brewing Company. Unfiltered Pilsner, delicately hopped with Nelson Suavin. So, Nelson Suavin hops tend to be a little bit on the grapey side. They give you some white grape notes. Pilsner is obviously clean, crisp lager. So, more on that about halfway through. This is an old can. I mean, 3123 is not super old. I think it
That's
just
not
got
too
it.
Old.
I think it was just disturbed. We'll get there. It's down with the sickness. You understand? All right. Let's get into the news. All right, first things first, DeAndre Hopkins made some comments basically like saying Kyler Murray doesn't love the game, and that's not the first time we've heard that, and that he'd like to play for a team with a good defense, and he got cut. They'd been trying to trade him. They couldn't do it. So he's a free agent and free to sign wherever. Popular landing spots have been the Bills, the Chiefs. Those are the two that I've heard for the most part. In any event, the Chiefs have a bigger need at wide receiver, particularly for an alpha. The Bills, it would give them one hell of a 1-2 punch as they try to move Allen away from running. What are your thoughts on the cut, first off, for Hopkins' value, where he lands, and we'll talk about the Cardinals' impacts on this in a little bit.
The cut actually surprised me because it wasn't like they really saved that much against the cap. Like he still accounted for, I think, almost $22 million against the cap. with a $19 million contract. So he's free to go anywhere. And what I don't see is like, yeah, I mean, it'd be fun to have him on the Bills or the Chiefs, but they like barely have like $2 million in like cap space combined. So I don't see how they're going to make that happen unless they start restructuring some contracts and they start kicking the can down the road on some of these players.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. And as always, there very easily could be a dark horse team on that too. Let me pull up Spot Rack. So the Chiefs don't really have room to the Bills.
I'm looking over the cap, and over the cap has 1.4 million for the Bills.
So no.
No, I don't see it. Like, well, the Cardinals had the third most cap space at the time.
Well, and I think the other thing there too is that they've said that he's willing to, you know, willing to wait, and you could get into some post June 1st type restructures or cuts or things of that nature, right? There's a lot of things that can happen for these teams to try to straighten things out. Valdez Scantling has, Jesus, 11 million.
He's like 10 million. Yeah.
10 million in dead cap. So you don't save that much. They're kind of not in a great situation, are they? They're not going to cut Butker.
No, the Chiefs are going to do a lot of restructuring. I did a tweet like a while ago. It was like Kelce and a few other players. But that included Mahomes, but I didn't realize Mahomes already did his restructure. Yeah. But they would make it there. It was a possibility to make him and OBJ work under contract. So yeah, there is a way to do it. It's just they're just be kicking the can. Which why not go for Super Bowl again?
And they're gonna have to. And they don't have a lot of high dollar contracts that are, you know, cut candidates right now that have a lot of, you know, a lot of money coming off the books if they do it. Really, I don't think the Bills do either. As I look through this, they're also kind of in a similar situation where they've been really, really good, and they'd have to restructure some deals because they don't really have a lot of guys that are cuttable that's going to net them a good amount of savings. So, you know, think about that. And then you look at, you know, the Bears are trying to build something up. There's an option there. They have $32 million in cap space, and Justin Fields is a hot commodity. I'm not trying to wish cast that. I'm just looking.
No, I see where you're coming from.
Looking at what's available. If he wanted to go to a team that's ascending, if you want to look at or even a fringe playoff team potentially for the Bears, I mean, that'd be a huge jump. But you know, if you want to look at some of these other teams, though, right? I know the Lions are up there with $23 million. The Jets have $23 million available right now. They both figure to be, you know, pretty decently close to playoff teams. The Bengals do have cap space right now. They're trying to get a deal done with Burrow, but they have $15 million available. They don't really have an opening at the wide receiver position to fit that, but if you got the cap space, you can find a place for Nuke, but it's not really a need for them. They're better off keeping that cap space. Who else would be kind of close? Baltimore's got $12 million. Yeah, the Dolphins. Dolphins kind of the same thing, though, right? With Waddle and Hill, you can certainly use Nuke. It's just a matter of, you know, where do you fit him and how many mouths do you have to feed? Jacksonville's got $10 million available. So there's some dark horses here, I think, that, you know, can be considered playoff teams that have the cap space to do something. San Francisco's another one. But Jets, Lions, certainly up there. You know, you've seen Bills and Chiefs. They literally have their bottom two in available cap space. So it's not just a matter of wanting it to happen. You can work with the cap, but you know, there are teams out there with bags of money too that they can drop at something. The Cowboys have $24 million right now. And opportunity. The Bears, the Panthers, who just signed a new quarterback, the Lions up there, the Jets. So I think that there could be some dark horse teams in this running too that aren't necessarily popping up.
Yeah, it all depends on what he wants to chase. Does he want the ring or does he want the money? If I was him at 31 years old, I just to go for the ring. I mean, you've already made your money.
Yeah. No, you absolutely should, and you should go for the ring. And you know, maybe it's a 1 year deal to try to get that, or, you know, they'd have to restructure and try to make it work. Maybe that's why he's trying to be patient, because he knows that they don't have the cap space right now and there are some things that have to get done. It is June 1st, so we can start seeing some of those post June 1st moves happen.
What about the Steelers?
I don't know that the Steelers. So the Steelers have the space. I don't know that he would consider that an attractive option as a, you know, it's quarterback's going to matter for Hopkins, I think. And I don't think Pickett's going to get it done in the way that getting to play with a Justin Fields or an Aaron Rodgers or whoever the Lions draft in a year or two. Or,
hey, now, don't knock Jared Goff.
You know, Dak Prescott, he wants a quarterback that loves football. That was one of the big reasons why he didn't want to be with the Cardinals anymore. I'm not saying Pickett doesn't, but Pickett just doesn't, I think, have the level of talent that's going to be, you know, attractive to that when you're later in your career and get to choose your location.
Watch him go to the Colts just because of
Richardson.
Yeah, and that arm he has. Things like, oh, I can, you know, I can jump ball still.
Mm-hmm.
I can high point it. Like, you know, that's one team like we're not really looking at because it's a rookie quarterback. It's a lot of changes going on. No one knows how that team is going to perform.
Mm-hmm.
That could be one team that we think. I mean, because it's the was the AFC South, the Colts are in. So yeah, I mean, you got the Texans. What's the other one? The Titans. Who's the third one? Who's the third one I'm missing out of those four?
Texans, Titans,
Colts.
Texans, Titans, Colts, and Panthers.
Is that what it is? The Panthers? Okay. Yeah. No, the Panthers are NFC.
No, NFC South. You're right. Oh, sorry. Jacksonville.
Jacksonville, that's right. Okay.
My bad. I wasn't actually paying attention to what you're asking. I thought we were talking young quarterbacks. Jaguars. And that's another one that I called out earlier. They have $10 million in cap space. They have some ability to move things and restructure. They have a young quarterback. They've got a good coach. I think they do have the infrastructure in place to make something
push now
happen there, to push now. He'd have people around him with, you know, with Calvin Ridley and Christian Kirk.
Trevor Lawrence is still under that rookie contract, which is a huge benefit because, you know, he's going to be asking for top dollar possibly when talks come.
It absolutely is. And they've got a little bit more flexibility, not having some of the bigger name vets that you have to work around on the salary side of things. So there's certainly stuff that can be done. That would be a good candidate. So we'll definitely keep an eye on that as things continue to progress. So some other things from around the league as we get through it. Bears projecting to be running back by committee. I think we all assume that. Mike McCarthy blowing some smoke up on Jalen Tolbert. Excellent example of a player making a second year jump. That's something to watch. You are 1 year removed from Tolbert, not doing a lot, but he was very, very well liked by the fantasy community coming into this. It's a buy low candidate, in my opinion, if you're rebuilding and need a flyer on somebody. I mean, he pretty much lost all of his value by doing nothing in year one. So if you're looking at somebody to make a year two jump, you know, that's certainly a guy that has the talent to do it. And, you know, you don't write somebody off after one season. Some guys just get started slower than others.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I never write anyone off after one season. And a lot of people do, especially in, like, dynasty leagues. They're like, oh, I'm done. You know, you need to learn how to move on from them. It's like, no, you kind of have to wait and see sometimes.
Mm-hmm. There was a report that Hopkins would be interested in returning to the Texans.
They got the money.
They got the money in the quarterback, and CJ Stroud's apparently having a really, really good
camp hype,
yeah.
He's exceeding expectations.
And Sam Howell, yeah. Sam Howell, too. So, camp hype on Kadarius Toney as well for what he can do with the ball in his hands. I think we all know that. We talked about the Chiefs a bit. Justin Ross having the trust of Patrick Mahomes. There's another one that, you know, was hurt the entirety of last season that a lot of people liked as a sleeper that's big bodied on a team with a lot of opportunity there. So another guy just watching him that you can look at as a potential buy low or a flyer?
I saw a draft, like, that wasn't a draft, it was like a trade. Because of that video that came out, the viral video of Mahomes throwing to Ross. And it was like a stupid trade. It had like Cedric Tillman involved, I think a third round pick and a few other assets. It was freaking, like, I'm just like, I wouldn't give anything more than a third round in general.
Right.
Just to see what Ross could do.
Yeah. Becomes a what are we doing?
Yeah.
Let's see. Brett Kern retired from the NFL, punter, Godspeed. Patriots have a normal offense under Bill O'Brien. That's good because last year was a shit show.
Yeah.
Luke Musgrave earning first team reps in OTAs, rookie tight end. Take that for what it's worth.
Yeah, I mean, Tucker Kraft's not too far behind.
Yep. Saints signed Jesse James. That's negligible.
The bike builder?
No.
I don't think very few people know who that is.
The tight end. Wow. I didn't realize that. Denver apparently cut Brandon McManus. They signed Elliott Fry. I'm pretty sure I drafted Brandon McManus 3 weeks ago in this dynasty startup that we're doing. Yeah, we have kickers in a dynasty league. Suck it. But
kickers are fun.
Kickers are fun. But yeah, they apparently cut McManus. So, huh.
McManus will sign somewhere.
Guess I got to draft another kicker in the 60th round.
Next round. Next week.
Yeah. Brees Hall on track for week one. That's worth mentioning because usually when you see positive news this early in the offseason, you're fine for the start of the season, especially if he gets a full camp in.
And there was already a video shown of him running, so.
Cutting.
Yep, and get that hype going.
Cutting is a big one. Yeah, and you don't really have to hype him up that far to get him up to the top because he's going to be there anyway. Gibson going to be used as a pass catcher. I guess he's showing off some abilities there, which makes sense. He got a shitload of balls in college.
That's, well, and he had it a couple years ago, and like I don't get it. Like, how's this news? It's like this is what we know.
What he's always done, yeah.
He was a wide receiver drafted to be a running back.
Yeah. Yep. Makes for great podcasting as I'm reading through shit live. I'll tell you what. Chuba Hubbard. Great.
Yeah, that one doesn't make any sense. I felt like that was just like a boost Chuba Hubbard report because it's like he wasn't that much greater than Miles
because
Sanders when he came in the red
there.
Zone.
Yeah.
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 It's like you're just as equal.
Baker Mayfield and Kyle Trask splitting first team reps. Saw that. Also saw the video of Baker making some really bad throws. It's off season. And people will cut that up to fit a narrative. So just take that for what it's worth, too. I mean, it didn't look great, but people are going to miss throws in OTAs. That's just how it
standard
happens.
Protocol.
You have no idea if those were back-to-back, how close they were together, what things looked like in between that. Just be careful with that when you're looking at videos. Dalton Kincaid.
The hype's getting out of control, man.
Yeah, Ken Dorsey said, we're nowhere close to knowing what the big picture is because we got to learn each other, which makes sense. And the hype, like, you got to be careful with the hype, right? Dalton Kincaid being the best tight end of the draft, I don't think after most people caught on to that, that was ever going to be in question. The thing you have to remember with Dalton Kincaid is unlike a Schoonover or a Musgrave or even a Mayer, is that he lands in a spot with an already established tight end and an offense that requires their tight end to do some different things. They don't need Dalton Kincaid to be the every down thing starting this season. So he might have a slower ascension and you need to be weary of that. You need to be ready for that. Cause even though he's the most talented guy out there, they also have a more talented tight end on the roster than any of those other teams have in Dawson Knox. They can do a lot of the same things if Kincaid isn't quite ready or has a bit of a learning curve, or even if they just want to ease him into it. So it's just something to be wary of to me.
I've seen like Kincaid in some people's dynasty tight end rankings, top six. Like, how do you put him at number six? Like, I didn't knock it. I was just questioning it. And I'm just like, all right. So, like, you have to have, like, this phenomenal season to be basically top six. It's like, I have a hard time just putting any of these rookie tight ends in the top 10, even top 12 right now.
Well, I think that with tight end, especially, you get anywhere outside of four or five, you can crapshoot that and make an argument. But, I mean, I agree. It's such a slow ascension for them. But I can certainly see that argument to putting him top five if you believe the upside's that high. You know, the mess of tight ends that we think about in redraft being decent, you're not really looking at them as a long-term, high-end dynasty upside player, and I think you can look at Kincaid for that, and it's not that hard to be a tight end six.
No. No, tight end six to like tight end 17 is probably separated by no more than 30 points.
Not a lot when I looked at it last, so. Here's the Bills and Chiefs news. Travis Etienne.
Yeah, I like how the knock on Etienne's going on, and then people are starting to think like, oh, you know, are we all too high on Etienne, and should we start fading him? It's like, go ahead and keep fading him, because the more you fade him, the more I'm gonna start taking him.
Well, the thing is like, do you fade a guy because they don't want him to take 75% of the carries at the bell cow level, right? And they want him maybe closer to 60 to 65%. You know, you can probably count on one hand the number of teams that are using a bell cow back, right?
Yeah. But I mean, like, also too, like, if you take away those carries, it's like he even had some games that he still finished as RB1 and he had 14 or less.
Right. No, I'm with you. And you can't, like, we don't want him doing 75% of the work as a running back is not an indictment on a running back for anything these days. It's literally, all right, do you believe he can be more efficient than the other guys? Because as I sat here and look at it, right, the teams that have the potential to have a true bell cow back, the Jets, and they probably won't, especially with Breece coming off the ACL tear, but he has the talent to do it. No, sorry. Yeah, Breece, Barkley for the Giants.
Austin Eckler.
Yeah, Austin Eckler. Potentially Dalvin Cook.
Jonathan Taylor,
Najee Harris, because we know the Steelers won't use more than one.
Nick Chubb as right now, because there's no one back there behind him.
But they don't want to use him that way, and that's kind of exactly it, right? Nick Chubb is a pure runner. So you want him to, he can catch passes. Sure, I'd love it they did that. They don't want to.
So hey, if he catches passes, man, he lit it up at the end of the season. He had five catches, so.
Maybe he's
the cream hub Nick Chubb combo.
I think it's safe to say, though, that, okay, yeah, him, we'll put Chubb in there, put Derrick Henry in there, and then
Najee Harris has to be in there, too, just because he's a volume back. I mean, that's all he is.
Maybe Josh Jacobs and CMC. So it's about a third of the league that is going to end up with bell cow backs or true bell cow backs. About a third of the league. It's 11 teams, right?
Yeah.
ETN's still going to, and you're going to have injuries in there. ETN's still going to be a back in one.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
So you don't fade that. And you don't really worry about that too much. He's also a guy that's going to get used in space, which leads to efficiency. Oh, yeah, the Jimmy Garoppolo thing.
The foot injury.
The foot injury, yeah. So he had a foot injury, failed his physical, took another physical, also failed that. So the Raiders at any point can choose to cut him without penalty before training camp starts. With no dead cap, no nothing, because he's damaged.
Aiden O'Connell season, baby.
It could be Aiden O'Connell season. If you're looking for a late flyer in super flex rookie drafts, like, not a bad thing to go that route right now.
No, I mean, you might as well just tank for Caleb Williams or Drake May.
No, just go for it. If he's hurt, cut him. Keep the cap space. Hold on to that cap space and just go for one of them. You're going to piss Josh Jacobs off, but it's not like you got, a while else going there, right?
Oh, man. Oh, yeah. Like, all right, so Josh Jacobs last year, he was in that contract year, so he bet on himself. 340 rushing attempts, 64 targets. I could see another 400 opportunity type season again coming out of him, like just run him into the ground.
Oh yeah, especially since they don't have long-term commitment there. Absolutely
right.
Michael Gallup feels more of himself after playing off the ACL tear last year. So, again, something to keep an eye on, a guy that you can look at for a potential bounce back into wide receiver 3-4 range.
How about Marquise Brown as a wide receiver 1 now in Arizona?
Yeah,
how does that make you feel?
Oh, yeah, we kind of glossed over that a bit. Yeah. It's interesting because he did it. He did it in Baltimore, but he's not your prototypical one. He's more of a guy that you expect to stretch the field and work downfield, and he's going to get his shots. And, you know, I think it's okay. The guy that I'm interested in right now, honestly, not for dynasty, but that I'm going to be looking at late in redraft rounds that performed when he got the chances last year, is Greg Dortch.
Like, you don't think it's going to be Michael Wilson this year? Well, Greg Dortch was who was he filling in for?
He was filling in for Rondale Moore when Moore was out.
Rondale
Moore. And then you're going to end up with Moore outside in Dortch or Pascal. And it's not that I don't like Michael Wilson. I think he absolutely could jump into something with a good camp or anything like that. But, you know, I want to look at it productivity and what they did. And for Dortch, who I've never been a huge fan of, but you look at the game logs where he covered at, right? I mean, there are games where he was pulling 9, 10, 11 targets in, you know, and 98, 103, 80, 55. I mean, he's having 14, 15 point days in full PPR.
Yes.
Getting some of that volume. So, I mean, that's not anything to sneeze at. That's something to keep an eye on with Hopkins gone. And I think Brown's going to get his, but Brown is going to be used the way that Marquise Brown can thrive, which is they're going to take shots to him. They're going to take shots to him downfield. And, you know, I think it's okay. I do think he's going to be the best wide receiver on that team, but I'm more interested in who gets into the short yardage or the intermediate game. Who are you going to get involved in that? And what are they going to do? And Greg Dortch right now is the guy with the inside track on that. Now, there were some games where Brown didn't play last year. When he did play, he was also up in the 10-digit target, or the 10-digit, Jesus, the 2-digit target range, especially early on. It fell down to high single digits after that. He's efficient enough to do things with that volume. Arizona's going to have to throw a lot, too. They're going to be behind.
Yeah, but we just got to figure out who's throwing. Is it going to be Clayton Tune? And how long is Kyler Murray really out for? Like, does the DeAndre Hopkins release have a lot more to do with Murray's recovery?
Yeah.
And then they're just using other things to say, like, you know, well, I didn't like him because, you know, he's too involved in his video games and so on and so forth.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. And, yeah, I mean, it could be Clayton Tune, who's a fifth-round rookie with some athleticism and some certain upside to his game. But, you know, is Colt McCoy going to be ready? Because I think if he is, it'll be him. But he was dismal. You know, we've seen Jeff Driskel get some run. But, you know, it has the potential to be real, real ugly with whoever's throwing the football. For Arizona, we're going to have to get a lot more clarity once the health situation takes shape as we get towards training camp. But just a kind of a thing to keep in mind, this does open it up for Michael Wilson, I think, long term. But I really think that, you know, you could be looking at a wide receiver 3 flex type value Greg Dortch for a lot of the season. And Marquise Brown's just going to do Marquise Brown things like he did last year. So that's kind of where I'm at with that. Thank you for bringing that up, though, because we did forget to talk about that as the other side of the Hopkins.
All good.
Yep. I don't know if there's anything else I need to...
What about Kadarius Toney being the wide receiver 1 template for the Chiefs?
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit, I think, last week when I said pick who's going to lead the Chiefs and fantasy points, and Kadarius Toney's one of them. I like Kadarius Toney in that offense. They'll get creative with him. They'll find out how to use him. They'll find out how to use him in space. And he is dangerous with the ball in his hand. And that's he showed that when he was in New York. The trick for Toney is staying healthy. If he's healthy in this offense, they will find ways to use him to get the ball in his hand and find a way for him to be able to, well, I don't want to say eat, but for him to be able to impact games. It's going to be bursty. It's not always going to be consistent. They'll find a way.
And, oh, here's one. Did you hear the hype this morning about Terrence Marshall Jr.?
They just pay it boys for a breakout season, and sure, yeah. Why not? He started to come on a bit late last year, and you know he's as much of a shot as anybody right now.
I mean, he had all of one touchdown last season off of 47 targets, 28 receptions for 490 yards.
Yeah,
so he can only improve from that.
Trying to figure out, was it here? I had notes on Tony from his last season in New York.
Really huge, like it was 10 catch, like 100 some 80 some yard game. I felt like it was two touchdowns.
Well, it's not just the game, right? He was seventh in target rate, low volume team. But yards per route run, he was 17th in the league. His separation was really good. He had a really good contested catch rate. He missed six games and was still 40th in yards after the catch. You know, he was the one giant that year that showed some productivity. So you get him on the field with a good quarterback and with other players around him and an offense around him, which gives him more space to operate. I think that that absolutely could be lethal if he can stay healthy.
Yeah, that's a big thing. If he can stay healthy.
If, yeah. That's always a big thing. And as far as Marshall goes, again, I think he's going to be a popular, you know,
late round flyer,
a popular option. But I mean, it's him and Mingo, right? And they're really, really similar players. So,
yeah.
And I mean, you've got Thielen. Oh, I guess there's Chark and Thielen there too. Thielen, you don't know how much is left in the tank. Chark was slightly disappointing. So yeah, he's got as good of a shot as anybody to break out and put it together and do it there, and probably a better shot than, you know, what you know of DJ Chark or, you know, what's potentially left in Thielen. But wide receiver room's wide open, so you can paint a case for a lot of guys. But Marshall's the younger one. He's the one you want to see do it.
It's kind of a quiet news week.
There's a fifth Lions player that might have violated the league's gambling policy.
Oh boy.
Also, the Lions made a kicker trade.
Oh yes, they got the guy from the Jaguars.
Yeah, Riley
traded
Patterson.
Like a 25 or 26 seventh rounder.
Oh, and McManus is now in Jacksonville. Okay. Well, I'll take that.
All right. Got a high octane kicker now.
We do have a high octane kicker now. All right, about 30 minutes in. Let's hit a beer review, then we'll talk Dynasty. That
sounds
feels
good.
Really fast.
Nah, I think we're doing good.
Beer review.
All right, go ahead. You start it off. No, Dan.
All right, I'll kick it off. Let me do a quick sip again because I haven't taken a sip in a while. Definitely most of my, like, same flavor as my other IPAs have. That's why I always go back to them, just because they have that nice fruity tone, pineapple, like, right off the tongue. Back taste doesn't taste bad. A little bit earthy once it settles. But definitely just the same as all my other IPAs. They all start blending together after a while, I feel like. Like, some have, like, a little bit stronger of a pineapple. Some have, like, a stronger other type of fruit. But
yeah,
overall, they just taste the same.
Yeah, and if you're saying the same realm and the same style, they're all going to be kind of similar, right? If you're drinking a lot of hazies, you're going to be similar. If you go West Coast, you'll change it up some. But, they definitely will stay similar. So I was drinking again from Southern Grist, their Southern Crisp Lager. Overall, really light bodied. Definitely has a little bit of that, like, pills, like sulfur kind of thing going on from the yeast, which is okay. Just kind of makes it a little bit more drying, gives a little bit of minerality to it. There's definitely kind of a of a crackery, like bready grain note to it, but it doesn't come out a lot on the flavor. It's more so on the nose, just a hint of that there on the flavor. It drinks really light, really crisp. The Nelson Suave hops definitely do show up. There is a white grape note kind of towards the back. It does finish dry. So it's real, real delicate and nuanced. It's not my favorite lager that I've had in the last 3 weeks, mostly because Dovetail was fantastic. Shout out to them. But overall, it's still really, really good. Southern Grist is more known for a lot of their fruited beers, but anytime I see somebody do a lager, I try to jump on it. And, you know, this is really solid. I really like the hop character they got out of it, in particular with Nelson Suave, and this is a really good showcase for that. So, all right, let's talk some Dynasty. So, Dynasty 101, we decided to do some of these educational episodes just because it would take for granted a bit that we've been doing this for so long that, you know, everyone knows what they're doing. Everyone knows what they're doing with Dynasty, or they know what, you know, what they're, you know, trying to accomplish. We try to fancy ourselves mostly a Dynasty show. But, you know, there's a lot of people that still just, you know, play casual. They're still getting into it, that are just redraft players, whatever. A lot of people looking to dip their feet in. So we like to do these 101 episodes every now and again, just to kind of get people familiar with it. So, just so I'm not doing a huge download of talking, Ryan, why don't you go ahead and overview what Dynasty is and how that differs from standard redraft?
So, like, Dynasty is, like, you have your fantasy football leagues that are redraft. You know, you go the 18 weeks, you build this phenomenal team. It's a championship team. You win the championship with it. You look at it, you're like, man, I love this team, but it's over. It's gone. You don't have that team next year. You got to do a whole new draft all over again. In Dynasty, you have a draft and you keep those players year after year, year after year. You actually become like an NFL GM. And what that means is when the fantasy football season ends, Dynasty season starts, because you're starting to look at your team. You're looking like at players, you're looking at youth, you're looking at age overall. If you're older players, like, do I need to move on from, what can I get? Another thing to look at too is, are you on the brink of another championship, or are you on the brink of a rebuild? So the way to look at that is, like, you know, if you had this, we'll say like Christian McCaffrey, like, he's a hard player to trade right now, but looking at him with all his injuries, he's been that borderline player for you, but you now, you know that you need more players. So you're looking at your team saying, I'm not a Christian McCaffrey away from winning, but I'm multiple rookie picks I could get either between this year and next year, and try to look at building for the future and get back to where I am today in a couple of years.
Yeah. And we'll get more into strategy in a bit. And, you know, because you keep your team, it does two things. One, it makes trades and strategy around that a lot more in depth. I think it's more in depth from a strategy perspective. It puts a premium on trades, making decent trades, knowing, you know, how to value rookie picks, which we'll get into in a minute. Like you said, Ryan, knowing when to sell players, knowing when you want to try to buy them, knowing when you want to get rid of somebody and move on, knowing when you need to turn your team over. Because, you know, look, you screw up a trade, you're not just resolved by it at the end of the year and we'll get them next year. You're stuck with it.
Yes.
You make a good trade, it's not, that was an awesome trade, I want it, and it's gone. You get to keep reaping the fruits of that. I think the other thing is that it forces you to really be in tune with your team, because it's not just, well, I suck and we're done. It's, you know, I'm trying to say, I mean, there's strategy around tanking, there's strategy around being good, when to pull the trigger and go in, when to get out. And it's a lot more involved. And it also gives you a lot more investment in rookie drafts and classes from a fantasy football perspective. You're normally invested from your own team, but, you know, the best and easiest way to get better without spending a lot is to be a good rookie drafter. So it's going to force you to pay attention more to college. It's going to force you to pay more attention to incoming players. It's not the most extreme you can get with paying attention to college. We won't cover Devy on this show. It's more of a Dan thing. But it does force you to apply some of that knowledge. Maybe if you're a big college football fan as well and you follow closely, then you already got a leg up doing this. And if you're not, you got to know when players are coming in, how to value them to make your team competitive. So it's a little bit more hardcore than what you get out of a regular redraft league. So I think we're going to talk draft here first. I'm just kind of going to kind of go chronologically.
Actually, so, the first thing I want to go with first is how many managers you want to have in the league to figure out your draft.
Yeah. And that is kind of a lot like redraft. You want to make sure, and if you're a commissioner, how do you structure your rosters? So the first thing with Dynasty is that it's focused on development. So you want to make sure that when you're structuring your rosters that you're probably going to have more roster spots than you would in redraft. It focuses on development, drafting, and trading, not so much on the waiver wire. The waiver wire has a place, but you want to go a little deeper than what you would maybe go in a normal redraft league because you want to be able to develop players. And there's some more we'll get into with that here in a second involving the taxi squad and things like that. That is also directly correlated by, as Ryan said, the number of managers you want to have, because, you know, a 12-team league, it's going to be easier to deplete the waiver wire on than an 8-team league. And ultimately speaking, if you can just go turn players over for better players off the waiver wire at a dynasty league, kind of undercutting the spirit of dynasty, in my opinion.
Yeah, your benches aren't deep enough because you're trying to make the waiver wire as bare as possible, where basically like no one's getting that next. Yeah. You don't want to be like a redraft season where like you have 20, you know, you have 20 total roster spots or 16 to 20 total roster spots. You're looking at 25 to 30 plus in dynasty, as you already kind of like start elaborating now about roster depth construction.
Yep. The other thing you're going to see with rosters that you want to keep in mind is your reserve spots. So IR, you'll typically see more of those in dynasty leagues because you don't want people in a situation where they have to drop players, right? I mean, you're going to get some of that, but, you know, whereas in redraft, you might have no or one IR spot or whatever. In dynasty, you probably need to have three to four because redraft, somebody tears an ACL, you drop them. Right, you're done. You're not going to get them back that year. As long as it's not a keeper league, you just send them away. Well, dynasty, like somebody tears an ACL. Well, no, you're still saddled with that player. You want to make sure that you're not putting managers in the spot where that player has to eat up a bench spot. Because, you know, you're not going to cut Kyler Murray because he tore his ACL last year in a Superflex dynasty league, right? So you want to make sure that you have a little bit more flexibility there. And the other thing is a taxi squad. Taxi squads are generally where you can hold players for 1 to 2 years.
Usually rookie. It's always rookies.
Yeah, they usually have to be added as a rookie. You can hold them for 1 to 2 years. Once you promote them, they typically can't go back. But it's kind of like a quasi-practice squad. It doesn't count against your roster total. It's literally a place where, you know, I think this guy is a development piece or some other dominoes need to fall. He's not going to contribute. Let me stash him there. Or, I mean, if you're in a rebuild, you can take a good player that's a rookie and stash him there for a year or two. And people might balk, but there's nothing wrong with doing that if you want to try to artificially grab a lower draft pick. And, you know, it's at that point with them stashed on taxi squad, it's not that you're not starting your best available lineup. They're on the taxi squad. They're on the taxi squad for a reason. There's roster considerations there, et cetera, et cetera. So just a little bit on strategy, but a little bit on what taxi squad is. You got anything to add with that?
Yeah. Another thing to add too is like when you do your draft, do you want to do your draft with just veterans only and then have a rookie draft later? Or do you want to do veterans and rookies in the same draft? Because, like, I mean, I've been in drafts where, you know, if I had the first pick in the regular draft, I had the 12th pick in the rookie draft or the last pick in the rookie draft. So it depends how you want to do that, too. Where I've also seen people do leagues where they do auction bidding for the first 5 rounds and then it goes back to snake after that. So it's many different ways to build your teams. And then another way to look at it, too, is, you know, roster construction. Like, when you say roster construction, it's like, you know, do you want to do one QB? Do you want to do super flex? Do you want to do two QB with super flex? There's many different standards, you know, tight end premium, PPR, half PPR, 0.1, like what is it? 0.1 yards per, or 0.1 point per every 10 yards for players. There's a whole different like scoring system you can add into it to kind of make it more interesting. So it's always good to have that and kind of throw it back and forth and see what other people in your league want to do when it comes to scoring and positional ranking. Like when we were in Kansas City, how we did our league and how we built it. Like we built it so super fast. We already kind of had an idea what we wanted to do with 8 teams. Mind you, we're still drafting and we still have 15 rounds out of a 70 round draft.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of draft, you bridged into it, so let's go into that a little bit. Dynasty drafts are different than redraft drafts in several ways. Do you want to talk about some of how strategy differs when you enter a dynasty draft versus a redraft draft?
Yeah. So like in a draft, like a everyday redraft, like you're looking for players who are going to get you the most points right now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're going to spend up on Justin Jefferson, Tyreek Hill, Stephon Diggs, Amon Ra St. Brown, T. Higgins, Keenan Allen, DeAndre Hopkins, still even depending on the landing spot. Like you're looking at these guys as like wide receiver ones, wide receiver twos easily. Where in Dynasty, you start looking at age and you start looking at what to do with them, especially like DeAndre Hopkins right now. He's age 31. He's not going to be like one of those second, third round picks. He's going to actually drop because a lot of people see that age and see I have 1 to 2 years at most with him before he's actually off my team. Where in redraft, you just play the now and moment where you don't care what he does next year because it's not going to matter on your team anyways.
Yeah. The biggest thing for me, I think, is that you pay attention to age. So you're looking for the most right now. But, you know, you're looking in the future, so you're going to draft some development pieces. But you also, you know, you don't want to go out and get a bunch of studs that are 30s or later. I mean, you can, and you kind of got to know where you're trending at, right? You're going to start the draft with wherever the value is because that's how you start every draft. You know, yeah, you're going to premium some of the younger guys a little bit. They might slide them up or down a half round, but it's really when you get into those middle rounds and you see what your team is trending towards that you have to think about how that lines up. If you're trending towards a bunch of older guys, you know, your window is going to be right now and you need to look later rounds as drafting win now versus I'm going to take flyers on some of these younger guys. Vice versa, you're ended up with a bunch of younger guys. You might take some flyers on some younger developmental prospects versus older veterans when you are doing that draft. And I think that's a big change in strategy from what redraft is, where you're just kind of best player available. You know, particularly once you're a few rounds into a dynasty draft, you need to pay attention to where your team's going and try to make sure that things line up for you to have a clear window or not be in this constant state of mediocrity. And you can get mixed up. I mean, you can you don't draft to trade, but you get mixed in with something like that. You know, you can always course correct through trading off some of the older, you know, more established talent, for younger talent, or, you know, you can get rid of some younger guys, maybe do a rebuilding team and, you know, grab,
like an easy example to use right now is like,
it, so.
Like an easy example right now is Cooper Kupp.
Yes. Perfect he's example older. Is Cooper Kupp. He's 30.
Yeah. Like redraft, he's wide receiver. He's the wide receiver 3 just because of what he can do. But in Dynasty, he's a back end wide receiver 2 just because of that age. Like, we know that Cliff's coming, but when is it coming?
Yeah.
Like,
no, that's exactly it. And you got to try to predict the cliff and, you know, it's a bell curve. So let's talk trades for a second. I just said it's a bell curve and that's kind of when to know how to let go of a player. When you have a guy that's good, that's a stud, maybe your team's not, right? You're looking to get rid of them, but they're not going to fulfill that next championship window. You got to value that.
You're looking at 2 to 3 years out and seeing. what you have.
And that's what you're trying to do. You're looking two to three years out and seeing with a guy like Cup. He's got a skill set that could keep him playing into his mid-30s, but it could also fall off at any point in time. You're not a win-now team. You're better off moving him for high draft capital than you are holding him if you're not a win-now team. And that's the type of stuff you think about in redraft. Trading Cooper Kupp's absolutely absurd right now if you got him or if you were to go get him. But in Dynasty, no injury, no nothing. It can be, I'm going to move on from him because I'm going to stack this draft capital. We're going to get him to a championship team. I'm going to stash these picks and use him for the future because, he's going to be 34 during my next run or my next window. And you have to have some of that predictability to it. But the other trick is you want to get out of them before the wheels fall off, because the worst thing you can do is cut a future, former stud for nothing or because they retired or whatever that was just sitting on your roster, not helping you compete or win championships. So you gotta kind of be predictable and be okay with, okay, I might miss a year or two of good productivity out of him, but he didn't fit the agenda of what I'm doing right now.
Right. And like a good way to look at like Cooper Kupp, like right now, you're like, okay, he's not fit my team. What can I get for him right now? Per keep trade cut, you can get the 105 or the 106 pick for him right now. I would maybe do the 105. I would even go, I'd actually want even more than that just for Cooper Kupp, just because you know what he can do. And plus this team that's basically looking to trade with you is going to be one of those who have a back end like first round pick. So it's like to try to get the 105 out of them, it's almost like you need this year's first and next year's first out of them just to kind of balance it out. So say like 12 team league, you're at the bottom there. You're looking to get rid of Kupp because you know you're right. You're at that 5-6 point. You know that you're not going to make it. You're looking at a team that says it has a 12th. You're like, you know what, man, I'll give you this pick, but I need your 2024 first just to kind of justify that balance of the pick.
Mm-hmm.
And then another thing with trading of picks.
Yes.
I don't, you want to go ahead and elaborate? Because you're probably going to say the same thing I'm going to say.
No, I was just going to say that's the next place I wanted to go is how to evaluate draft picks, because that seems to be the single biggest thing players transitioning from redraft to dynasty struggle with, is how do you value draft picks. So go ahead and say what you're gonna say. I'll fill in whatever I think needs to be filled in.
I'll use one of our leagues as an example. Like I knew I was done. I knew I was gonna tank. I had my team ready to set to full tank because I knew there's no way I'm gonna make it. So I looked in, I traded Travis Kelce away, I traded a bunch of other players away, knowing that I needed these pieces to give me new pieces, because if I have multiple picks, I can also use these picks to either pick a player or try to use them as a package deal with other pieces on my team to try to get an additional younger piece or a piece plus a pick next year or the following year to kind of keep that team going in the up trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
But another thing too, like when I do trades too, is like, it's almost good to have a league where you could say like, all right, you know, you guys can trade your picks, but if you're trading your picks, you almost have to be in this league next year, or the league's already paid for. So
yes, that's how most people will do it, is they'll make you pay. When you pay dynasty dues, you pay a year in advance. So when you start up, you'll pay 2 years. From there, you pay every year, but you're paid up a year forward. And you know, you can trade picks, I think, on Sleeper out 3 years, but you know, if you trade a pick from a future year, you gotta pay for the year you're trading picks in, because it's a commitment. You don't want a player to waffle and then, you know, you got to try to bring a new guy in who doesn't get to draft his own team, pick his own team, maybe robbed of all his picks and everything, which is called an orphan. We'll get to that later too. And you know, have them come in just a shit situation. Oh, by the way, you got to donate league dues. So if they're trading picks in a future draft, my advice is players that are trading those need to be paid for that future draft. If they quit, they forfeit their dues, so you can bring somebody in to replace them for free that first year and give them a chance to get their team in line.
Yep. That's a perfect one.
So evaluating pick capital is a difficult one. And you know, depending on what stage you're at in the season, it's a little different how you have to think about it. If you're early in the season and early in the college season and, you know, you think you know where things are going to fall, but not really. Actually, before I get into that, the biggest thing with draft picks you have to understand is they are currency. If you control draft picks, you control what you do. Because draft picks are the one thing that everyone wants, just like money is the one thing that everyone wants. It doesn't matter if you're competing, if you're not competing, whatever. People want draft picks. And draft picks are usually the price to get a good player, or are almost always the price to get a good player. If you're a competing team and if you're a rebuilding team, draft picks are what are going to help you rebuild because the easiest way to do it is through the draft. So draft picks are currency. That's the first thing to understand. Having draft picks is good. More so than having players, depending on what situation you're in. The next thing is how do you evaluate those picks? Because first, second, third, fourth, especially when it's not the offseason, you don't know where those are going to fall. It's a little tricky. The first thing is whoever you're trading with, you need to look at their team, look at their record, make a reasonable prediction on where that pick's going to fall to properly establish value. If it's an early first, it's going to have more value than a mid first, going to have more value than a late first. You know, you have to know where that pick is going to fall. You have to know your league format because super flex leagues are tied in premium leagues or whatever are going to artificially drive up values of the rookie class, particularly with quarterbacks and tight ends. Single quarterback league, quarterbacks will go third, fourth, you know, late second to third round on the high end. Rookie draft or super flex, they're going to go 1-1, 1-2. So you got to know your format. You got to know where you think that's going to fall. And then you have to, the way that helps me is to assign a player value to it. If I know I'm picking the 104 this year, right, in a super flex league, you know, I know that I'm probably looking at Jahmyr Gibbs or my choice of wide receiver. And then you have to, then that's kind of an easy way to look at it and decide how do I value that versus these other players that are in the deal. You also have to look at, you know, what your current player's productivity is, what's it going to take to replace them, things like that. But the way I think about it, to put a bow on this, because I've been talking for a minute, is stud players are going to be multiple first most of the time, usually a high and a mid. Your first round picks are almost always guys that are going to have some fantasy relevance or have a shot to have fantasy relevance. You get into the second round, a lot like the real NFL draft. Those are going to be guys that, you know, maybe you've got an aging player that's on the downward curve, but still valuable. You've got a running back on an expiring contract. You've got, you know, a wide receiver two or three that you're moving. That's when you get into second round value. Third and fourth round value, those are pretty much sweeteners on trades. You're not really going to solo trade a third or a fourth round pick for anybody. Those are going to be like, I need a little cherry on top, so let's sprinkle this little cherry on top. That's how I think about it.
And how you value a trade is different compared to how I'll value a trade. You know, like every manager looks at a trade differently, thinking like, you know, like, oh man, you got ripped off, or that's a good trade, that's a bad trade. That's collusion. You know, you're pushing for this and you're pushing for that. Oh, it's like,
yeah,
you don't know how these teams are going to happen. It's like, you know, you make this big trade. Next thing you know, these players go down. It's like, well, was the trade bad now? No. It's like, you can't play a god of like, of how these teams are going to be. So it's like, as long as it's not like full blown, like collusion, which is kind of hard to find out anyways, you can't really call it like that. So it's like, if someone says, I'll give you this player for your third or fourth rounder, and I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll do that. Yep. And then you get a couple league managers who are upset saying like, well, now that's BS. That's collusion right there. It's like, well, no, because it's just how they evaluated it. And that's how this guy evaluated his own team, saying, I'll take that third or fourth round pick for this player.
Yeah. Or, you know, you could have a newer player that just doesn't understand. And then as a commissioner, it's not your job to veto. You can pull them aside and try to teach them, tell them to learn whatever. But you may have somebody that just doesn't understand evaluating picks if you've got newer players in your league. And, you have to understand that's not always going to be a collusion type of scenario. Dynasty trades get interesting when you throw pick values in, because there are some people that are really confident in their ability to use picks and they want picks. There are some people that aren't. I know of at least one guy in one of my dynasty leagues that always trades damn near all of his rookie picks because he's not confident in his ability to draft.
Yeah, I've seen that too.
And that's fine.
I've been in a couple leagues like that.
Yeah, and that's fine. If you devalue them that much, but you know, you just got to be. He's given up entire drafts to get players and to get established stud players. And you know what? For him, that's fine because he doesn't trust himself to draft. Doesn't mean it's collusion. Doesn't mean you're going off the rails with that or anything.
No, it's just how you want to build your team. And that's what you think of yourself and your team. So
absolutely. So we've covered rule sets, how it's different. We covered drafting. We covered pick evaluation. We covered kind of how you manage your roster. Is there anything else you can think of to touch on with that?
Playoff seeding.
That's a fun one. I love this. So
talk about one of your leagues last
sure.
year. I love it because I love this idea. And
yeah, I love
I
it
find
too.
It fun.
And you can apply this to redraft too. This gets a little outside of it. You can apply this a bit to redraft until we get to the draft order. So the way I did playoff seeding is I did, top five teams. It was top five teams, and the sixth team was based on points four that wasn't the top playoff team. And a team that was like last in the league in record, just because of some blow up performances on benches. Like, he wasn't mismanaging his team bad or anything like that. It was just some bad luck.
He was playing the top scoring team every week.
Yeah. Yeah. Playing the top scoring team every week, whatever. You take the luck out of it, get him in as a sixth seed, and he ended up winning the whole damn thing.
Yeah.
And rewarding that points four. So I do have a league where I'll do top five on record and the sixth is on points four. And that's not necessarily a novel thought. A weird thought or anything like that. The thing that makes this different is actually how we did the rookie draft order. And I think that is the part that applies to Dynasty. So tanking's a thing. Everybody knows that tanking's a thing. Tanking's a thing in every major sport now, and it's a thing in fantasy football. And I think people are less split on how ethical that is or not anymore. I think people just are starting to accept it. But I have a draft lottery implemented, a lot like the NHL or the NBA does. And basically, it's if you're the lowest record, you have the highest odds, but the non-playoff teams are all draft lottery entered. And, you know, that's how we decide order. Most people go, you can go reverse a playoff stand or reverse a regular season seeds. You can go full NFL where your non-playoff teams are locked in on regular season, and then it's how the other teams finish in the playoffs. You can do some things with toilet bowl and consolations. It's just the way that I decided to do it to kind of eliminate the incentive for tanking a bit, which is, you know, you can tank, but you're not guaranteed the first round pick. And guess what? The worst team didn't get the first round pick or didn't get the 101. And sorry, not first round pick. You're can tank and not necessarily get the first overall. Worst team didn't get the 101 because you're not incentivized for that. You're still going to get a top, you know, in that league, I think a top four pick out of it, but you're not guaranteed the 101. So compete and put your best foot forward. And it's just a way to curve it. Everybody does it a little bit differently. But I think that's the interesting wrinkle there. And then the playoff seeding is not something that's uncommon to us or even redraft where, one, points four gets in, and two, I reseed every round, which I think not everyone does. I think some people go where it's the bracket. You just play the bracket at that point. But
right.
I reseed every round where, you know, the best team left is always going to play the worst team left, and the middle two will play the middle two.
And that makes sense. Why should the best team have to play the harder schedule? It should be an easier schedule for them to get there.
Right. So just that's all preference, but It's just an interesting way of doing it. There's a lot of different, we can talk about modifiers, I guess. So we talked about tight end premium. You want to go into what tight end premium is and some of the different scoring settings you can throw on these. This goes for redraft too, but we'll just bridge into it.
Yeah, like tight end premium, it's like, so like say you're like full PPR. So, you know, any running back catches 1 point, any wide receiver catches 1 point. For tight ends, it's like, you know, they're not that great outside of Kelce, Andrews, maybe Kyle Pitts, other couple, TJ Hockenson. And then it's just kind of like whatever else is available. Where here, you're trying to kind of bring them, boost them up a little bit. So you can say, like, you know, we'll make it 1.5 points for every tight end catch or 2 points for every tight end catch. You're basically trying to even out the playing ground where people can get a running back, a wide receiver, and a tight end and almost get like similar point base out of it. So it's actually like a tight end booster to help these lower end tight ends actually become fantasy relevant on your team. So instead of going from what, 4 points, you get 10 points.
You get 10.
You know?
And what that does is it makes your player pool deeper and it makes your draft pick your rookie draft deeper. Because tight ends are typically a position that's not super valued. Super flex, same thing. You know, we do some things with points per first down, some interesting kicker scoring, points per carry is an option. PPR is obviously the thing most people are familiar with. But, you know, just things to think about as you try to level your league and really elevate the value of various players, because you want as many relevant players coming out of a rookie draft as you can get. You want a league to be competitive, and you know that's kind of how you do that from a modifier perspective. Platforms, we didn't talk platforms, so let's talk platforms briefly and then we can wrap this up. So where are you going to host your dynasty league? Sleeper is by far the most popular. I think it's easy to understand. The scoring settings are not the most robust on the market, but they're definitely up there. They do a great job listening to their client base. The mobile app is well designed. There's a desktop version, which isn't quite as easy to use. Their drafting allows you to either do mobile internet draft or project up onto a screen if you are doing an in-person draft. Notifications are good. News is good. Real easy to manage things. That's one of the more popular ones, or probably the most popular one at this point. My fantasy league is another one. The interface is crap. For lack of a better term, the interface is crap. They're also very, very responsive to their clientele, though, but where it shows up heavy is customizations. They let you do things like contract leagues. They let you do a bunch of different scoring customizations that even Sleeper doesn't necessarily allow. So if you want to get crazy and really, really hardcore, you can use MFL. It is paid. Usually that gets built into league dues, where Sleeper is a free option. I haven't used Flea Flicker or some of the other ones out there. Do you have anything to say on those?
I use Fantrax, but I didn't use any Dynasty, but I heard they're starting to do Dynasty Leagues now too, where they can do contracts also.
Yep.
And ESPN, the interface.
And ESPN and Yahoo being really behind the eight ball, I think still don't support Dynasty. So
no.
That's something to be aware of as well. They're still catering to, you know, more casual players. They just support redraft. All right. Anything you think we missed? Go ahead.
Yeah. Is it going to be a free league or is it going to be a buy-in league? And, you know, how you do league dues and how what's paid out.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, it's a good example. I like to do, like, if you don't know what you're getting into when you get into a dynasty, jump into a free one. Mm-hmm. Because then you can actually see if it's actually, you know, is it something you want to do? Because if it's free, it doesn't matter at the end of the day if you quit at the end of the season or if you want to carry on. But if you want to carry on, it's like, you know, that goes to show you, like, okay, I'm going to go find a money league. Because once you get money involved, that's when you really start getting true, like, dynasty players involved.
Yeah. You spread another thing for me with that. Money leagues, a bunch of different ways to do payouts, just as there is for redraft and dynasty. There are some things like Empire Leagues that you can do that you don't necessarily have the ability to do in redraft. I think the biggest thing for dues is just when you pay, that differs from redraft, is just when you pay for an upcoming season. Please make people pay when they trade picks. rule changes is a big thing we didn't cover on.
Oh, yes. Like rule changes and bylaws?
Yes. In a redraft league, it's not that big of a deal because you pretty much start fresh every year. In a dynasty league, you may, especially long-running ones, as things trend differently or people figure out different things, you may have a want to increase or decrease roster spots. You may have a want to
go from standard to PPR scoring league.
Setting, go to standard to PPR, or add a super flex QB, or you know, change how you're doing things to spice things out. Not unlike the NFL, where they do rule committees and rule changes and things like that. It's important in dynasty leagues to, one, have written out bylaws that cover things like this, that cover, you know, how the league's going to run, what the roster structure is, what the payment structure is, what the payout structure is, how playoffs work, what your expectations are. But it's also really, really important to have a methodology built in for rule changes. I think most people favor the majority vote for that, where, you know, anybody can propose a rule change and then it goes to the entire league to vote on that. There are some that do more of a committee approach, where they might, you know, have two or three people as part of a committee that debate it out, and then, you know, simple majority wins or quorum wins. But for the most part, vote is the best way to do that. And, you know, it's important because, you know, changing a league can change how you structure a roster. So you just want to make sure that everybody's on, you know, feels like they have a voice is in and on the same page, because dynasty leagues, you're going to be playing with guys year over year over year. It's a commitment more so than redraft is. So you want to make sure that things are spelled out. They have a means to request changes and you can keep things fresh and fun.
And a nice thing too, like, especially when you like stated, like, you know, how you're reconstructing your roster with these rule changes. If you put a rule change in for this year, it doesn't usually go into effect until the following season. So if you do make rule changes for 2023, it goes into effect 2024. That way everyone has that year to kind of readjust their whole entire roster, not just a couple weeks or a couple months to say, like, okay, this is what we need to do. It's like you have the rest of the season to figure it out. And then when the next season kicks off, that's when that new rule kicks into place.
Yep. We just voted in one to go to get rid of – we got rid of DST, and then I think there was a vote to go super flex, but going one QB to super flex, right? Nobody's trading for that. Nobody's drafting for that. I think we're going to do a 1 or 2 year lead time before that actually gets implemented, just to give people the ability to prepare.
Right. Yep. Exactly.
So, all right. Anything else?
I think we pretty much covered it all.
I think we did too. All right. That is our show. Thank you guys for tuning in. At Ryan Miner _ FFB, at Beerfield Hop with 2 P's, at Beerfield on Twitter. We've got at Beerfield 30, who will be back with us next week. So it should be normal time, normal place. I'll be just getting back from Austin. We'll figure that out. What did I decide we were talking about next week? Hold on. I want to go figure that out too. I should really start throwing teasers out a little bit better.
I just looked at the show sheet tonight, so to figure out what tonight was.
Yeah, no, tonight was a good one. We're doing Dynasty Stock Up. So we'll be looking at guys that survived the draft and kind of raise that or didn't raise that. We talked a little bit about this the week before, but we'll do a more deal. So I would say we'll probably just bring a couple guys a piece, maybe one at each position, or, you know, maybe just pick three guys each and go through, you know, guys we think whose stock went up through, you know, the offseason processes and things like that. So, like, Marquise Brown right now is a really popular one.
Yeah.
So we'll go through that, and then, you know, we'll keep going the next couple weeks or so for dynasty stuff before we hit the dog days of July, which has a lot of variability. So that's our show. Thank you all very much for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.